Stillman & Company is delivered by TriStar Moving, ESPN 1025, The Game. I used to work with somebody who always would get mad at me because they were worried that I was kind of a slave of the moment. And he would always refer to his wife lovingly and how they would go out to dinner. And if she liked it, she'd say, "That's the best restaurant I have ever been to." And he would say, "It's the best you've ever been to." And he said, once you start saying stuff like that, you can't take that person seriously. But that it's the person who never says, "That's the best meal I ever had. That's the best taco I've ever eaten. That's the best city I've ever been to." That when they say, "Hey, that's the best vacation I ever went on," you think to yourself, okay, there may be something to this.
They mean it.
Sometimes I feel like I am a little bit of a slave of the moment. Like right now, right here. I one time contemplated after LeBron James had come back down 3-1 against Golden State with Cleveland and had had the game-winning block to set up the Kyrie Irving game-winning shot in what was really the only championship that LeBron has ever won that we looked at and we said, that's LeBron's. And I wondered aloud, is LeBron better than Michael Jordan? And now a couple years removed from that, I think, boy, that was silly. Why did I ever say that? So I am throwing up the stop sign right now to say that I am giving myself a little chance to at some point maybe go back and revise this take that I have right now. But in sports, team sports, we're always told it's never about one guy. It's never about one guy. Sometimes it's about the one guy. Michael Jordan, it was about him. LeBron James, when he was the one guy, he only really won one, and even then he had Kyrie. You know, LeBron's in L.A., he won the championship last year, but they had to go get him Anthony Davis in order to do it. He had to play with Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh. When it's the one guy who totally transforms an entire team. And I'm not saying that Vanderbilt baseball would be back in the College World Series if it wasn't for Kamar Rocker, or that Kamar Rocker has made that program, because quite frankly, Vanderbilt was a great program before Kamar Rocker, and they had won a national title before Kamar Rocker, and they're going to go back to Omaha and probably win more national titles after Kamar Rocker leaves. But a couple of months ago, I felt like Jack Leiter maybe had passed Kamar Rocker as far as top MLB prospects. And maybe he has. I don't know. I don't scout baseball players, although I do think that I know baseball pretty well. But Friday, and usually when we have a remote like we did at Third and Home, I like to get there about an hour before the radio show. I got there about 30 minutes before we went on air Friday. And that's because I couldn't stop watching Kamar Rocker on TV. Now, I remember Kamar Rocker when he threw the no-hitter against Duke. And I remember Kamar Rocker when he won Vanderbilt the World Series and was the most outstanding player as a freshman in 2019. And even knowing that he was the 2019 Tennessee Sports Person of the Year, according to the Tennessee, and although I do kind of disagree with that, even though knowing that ahead of time, I was wowed by his performance Friday against East Carolina. Now, when he got the ball in game one of the regional against Presbyterian, I sat back and I thought to myself, you give Kamar Rocker a 6-run lead, you're going to lose. And they did. But watching him against East Carolina exit with 2 gone in the 8th, having not given up a run in a 1-0 game, I thought, that's the kind of guy who carries a team. I know Vanderbilt's got a good team. I know they've got other good players like Dominic Keegan or Enrique Bradfield Jr. or Jack Leiter or Nick Maldonado. But he's the star. He was the star as a freshman. He's the star now. If Vanderbilt is going to win the national championship, they're going to need at least 3 more wins probably out of Rocker. It'd be nice if they only got 2, but they'll probably need 3 because it's going to be hard. And I was thinking after watching that performance on Friday and watching what it did to Vanderbilt the entire weekend, because just like who knows what happens to the Vols if they don't hit a walk-off grand slam from Drew Gilbert in game 1 of their regional against Wright State, who knows what happens to Vanderbilt if they're down 0, if they're down 1-0 facing East Carolina and Jack Leiter runs into a little bit of trouble in game two. Who knows if Patrick Riley gets the ball yesterday in a winner-take-all game three in which Maldonado has already pitched on Friday and Saturday. Who knows? It feels like Kamar Rocker might be, when all is said and done, the best Vanderbilt baseball player of the Tim Corbin era. And I don't say that lightly. And while I do like to include the group in on all of these discussions, like Caroline and Ian and everybody else, I really think that I maybe have the most in-depth knowledge base of this outside of Willie Donick and Darren McFarland to discuss this kind of thing. And I would love to know what Willie thinks about this. And I would love to know what Darren thinks as well. But I think Kamar Rocker, when all is said and done, and you put his accomplishments up on the board, may be the most accomplished Vanderbilt baseball player of the Tim Corbin era, which I feel pretty safe to say would make him the most accomplished Vanderbilt baseball player of all time. And if I had to rank them, and I guess I will, I think Rocker right now sits at number one. And there's still more of this story to be written. And I still think if I was a Major League Baseball team and I had the first overall pick, I would probably take Henry Davis, the catcher, who's not at Vanderbilt. But then I think I'd still probably take Leiter over Rocker. I just love that fastball that Jack Leiter has. Not that I don't like Rockers, but I just think Leiter's plays. But then I was really thinking, who else is on the list? David Price didn't get out of the regional. Can't be him. Jeremy Sowers had a great Vanderbilt career and really elevated the program. The first step, one of the hardest steps. But he never got to the College World Series. Much less throw a no-hitter in a super regional. Much less in the case of Jeremy Sowers. Much less win the most outstanding player. Nah, he didn't do that. There have been a lot of great players. Dansby Swanson, David Price, Ryan Flaherty, Mike Minor, Sonny Gray, Carson Fulmer, Tyler Beatty. We can go on and on. And yet, I just watch Kamar Rocker on Friday, and I think he's the best to ever do it at Vanderbilt. And that's saying something. When you think of all the great players at UCLA, when they won all their national championships, we all remember Lou Alcindor and Bill Walton. You would say not to take anything away from anybody else who played at UCLA, but doesn't it kind of do that when the two people that when we say UCLA basketball, you think Wooden, Walton, and Jabbar? I really feel like Kamar Rocker, for what has been essentially 20 years of great baseball, I really think he's number one. And again, that is over everybody who has come through there and some great players. Doesn't mean he'll be the best pro. It doesn't mean that he'll go out and be the most outstanding player of this College World Series. But man, he's got it. Whatever that it is. I remember John Madden in Tom Brady's first Super Bowl win. As the Patriots are driving down to win the game. And again, Brady only threw for 100 yards and change. Kurt Warner threw for 350. Brady threw one touchdown pass in that game to David Patton. You've seen the highlight 1,000 times. The only other thing you've seen about that game that you remember is Brady, after it's over, with his championship shirt on, putting his hands on his head like, oh my God, I can't believe it. And yet John Madden said as they started that drive, boy, I'm really impressed by this Tom Brady. I've seen him on film, and I've talked to him, but watching him tonight, I'm really impressed. And I get that kind of vibe watching Kamar Rocker pitch. So I think, after that performance Friday, and I know it's a Monday show, so usually there's... I think he's the best to ever do it at Vanderbilt. And he's got at least one more start. Maybe three. Probably two. But at least one more start. And I just don't want to take for granted the kind of career Kamar Rocker has had. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll get to your reaction on that. Plus, I think I've decided I want to rank the five best players of Vanderbilt baseball in the Tim Corbin era. And again, this is not to take anything away from the Vols. I'm happy for the Vols. I'm rooting for the Vols. I hope we get a Vols-Vandy Winner take all, College World Series.
That would be a blast.
Final. And I don't care if it goes three or goes two. I don't care. I just want to see them be the best two teams, take each other on, winner take all, best of three. Chad Dallas, Kumar Rocker, Nick Maldonado, Hunley. I mean, that's what I want to see. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We're live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's ESPN 1025 The Game, and we're streaming on the Game Nashville app.
Tim, you mentioned earlier how difficult it is to get to Omaha. Was it even more so this year, given COVID, all the injuries you guys had to overcome, and just, you know, the relative youth of this team?
Well, I think the injuries are real. I never talk about them because it's kind of a next man up situation, but those are real. We've lost Dominic at the beginning of the year. We lost Tate two different times, lost Carter. Parker Nolan has been tremendously valuable in the fact that he's played first, second, and third just on a whim and never blinks, and just plays very good defense. We lost Jason a little bit. You know, the center fielder has been the only guy that's really been the steady guy on the field. And, you know, it's been a great thing. He's 110 pounds and he's played 60 games. So we've stayed healthy, and staying healthy. I'll tell you, the thing about 2019 is we were very, very lucky. And I say the luck because of health. We just didn't lose anyone to health. And you have to have some of that in order to be good.
There you go. That was Tim Corbin. And I will say this. It is a lot easier to sustain injuries when you've got the two best pitchers in the sport. And so, you know, hey, we may not be playing with these two guys out there, but we know we can give the ball to Rocker or Leiter, and they're going to give us at least six and probably keep the other team under two runs. And that's probably why Vanderbilt has been able to have the success they've had this year. By the way, I saw someone text in, our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. I saw somebody text in and say, please pick Vanderbilt to win the national championship because Tennessee fans would love that. I can't do that. I can't, and I'm not. That's no knock to Vanderbilt. I think the College World Series is one of the hardest to win because, like, we'll use hockey as an example.
Mm-hmm.
You can have a couple bad nights in hockey. Like last night, the Tampa Bay Lightning had a bad night, got dominated by the Islanders, lost 2-1. Yeah, I think Tampa Bay will be okay. Like, I think Tampa Bay will be fine. Kumar Rocker has a bad start in game one, or Jack Leiter has a bad start in game two. It's going to be almost impossible for Vanderbilt to dig themselves out of it. So I do not think that the way the bracket sets up in the College World Series, that it is unforgiving. And that's why I can't pick anybody to win the national championship. I really can't. There have been times where I have seen teams that are very good not be able to win the College World Series because of an error, because somebody gets hot, because they run into the wrong pitcher. And I would say that that's why I can't say that for Vanderbilt, though I do feel pretty good about their chances. I feel good about Tennessee being able to hit their way into the final, which is kind of, you know, you can't do this until you get out of your bracket. And that is the hard part. So I got my five best Vanderbilt players from the Tim Corbin era. And again, these are my five. So your five can be different. But we start, of course, at the top with the best player of the Tim Corbin era. And I think it is the newly established member of the Tim Corbin best era. We start at number one.
Number one.
Kumar Rocker. And it's almost a travesty that Kumar Rocker didn't play in the postseason last year. But he has been, he's one of those guys who's good normally. You put him in the postseason, and he's in a totally different realm. John Smoltz was a lot like this. When you think of the Braves of the 90s, you always think of Maddox, Glavin, Smoltz. Glavin and Maddox were better regular season pitchers. When the lights came on, Smoltz was the guy in October you wanted with the ball in their hands. Rocker has been that guy. Whether it's no-hitters against Duke in the NCAA tournament, whether it's unbelievable performances in the College World Series as a freshman being named the most outstanding player, whether it was the burden of having all of those expectations on his back last year and then having the season get wiped away, and now what he's doing, including his unbelievable performance against East Carolina. Kumar Rocker has accomplished everything you could ask of him in his 2+ seasons at Vanderbilt. I don't know if he'll be the number one overall pick. I don't think he will be. And I don't think that he'll go of the highest picks. David Price was number one overall from Vanderbilt. Dansby Swanson was number one overall from Vanderbilt. We know they've had multiple top 10 picks. Austin Martin last year was a top 10 pick. But I think Kumar Rocker, when you just look at the trophies on the wall, and there's going to be a lot of trophies for a lot of these guys, I think Rocker right now is the number one guy of the Tim Corbin era.
Number two,
David Price. And had David Price won a little bit more in the postseason, he's probably ahead of Rocker. The amount of records that Price set at Vanderbilt were unbelievable. What David Price did, and again, he was a local kid, went to Blackman High School, but what David Price did was Vanderbilt baseball was inching towards relevance because they had some good teams. You know, that 2004 with Warner Jones and Ryan Mullins and Jeremy Sowers, they ended up in the Super Regional where they got blasted by Texas, but they weren't really elite. And then David Price came along. And David Price was by far the best player in the country his junior year. He was the Golden Spikes Award winner. He was everybody's surefire pick to go number one overall. And he did. The one thing that's keeping David Price from number one is that that Vanderbilt team lost to Michigan in the regional here in Nashville. And that, quite frankly, David Price was the losing pitcher in the losing game. And I know, again, not to knock any of David Price's accomplishments, and I don't feel like I'm doing that, but one guy's the most outstanding player of the College World Series. The other guy gave up the home run that sunk the season. Price, by the way, was excellent. And I've heard Willie talk about this game a lot. And I was at this game, and they played Austin Peay. Sean Kelly, who pitched in the major leagues for a while as a reliever, started for Austin Peay. And Austin Peay was the 4 seed. Vanderbilt was the 1 seed. Kelly was fantastic. Vanderbilt, I believe, had to have a walk-off homer in order to win that game against Austin Peay. It was an extra inning game. Price was fantastic. He came back in the elimination winner-take-all game against Michigan, and he couldn't get it done. So he's number two.
Number three.
I'm putting Dansby Swanson at number three. He's a 2-time All-American, but the reason I'm putting Dansby Swanson at number three is not because he was the number one overall pick in the draft, not because he was a great defensive player, not because he was the leadoff hitter on the national championship team, not because he hit a double off the wall against Kyle Funkhauser that emptied the bases that got them going in that 2014 College World Series. I'm putting him number three because he was the most outstanding player of that World Series, and it wasn't close. And I think ultimately, there are a lot of people that played a role in that 2014 championship. Jonathan White had the big home run against Virginia. The pitching staff down the stretch was fantastic. But I have to go with Dansby Swanson, without a doubt, as number three. Because, again, he was the most outstanding player of the College World Series. And while there are a lot of people who have accomplished a lot at Vanderbilt, that's a pretty big trophy.
Number four,
Pedro Alvarez. People forget about Pedro Alvarez because Pedro Alvarez did not have a good Major League Baseball career. It's like, you know, David Price had a good career and Dansby Swanson had a good career and Walker Buehler's had a good career. And we expect Kumar Rocker and Jack Leiter to have good careers. Pedro Alvarez was every bit everything that Dansby Swanson was when he was at Vanderbilt. But he was probably a better player. You know, Dansby may be more complete, but Pedro Alvarez was a home run hitter. SEC Freshman of the Year. First team All-SEC. All-SEC Tournament. National Player of the Week multiple times. Golden Spikes finalist. First team All-American. First team All-SEC. All-SEC Tournament. SEC Tournament of the Week. He had it all. He was single season hits record. Had 105 in 2007. He was the career home runs leader, tied for first with 49. Pedro Alvarez did it all. And we forget about him because his career in Major League Baseball is over, and it was rather unspectacular with the Pirates and the Orioles. But at Vanderbilt, Pedro Alvarez was a bad boy.
Number five.
And this takes us to the final one. And this one was tough for me because there were a lot of guys you could have considered. You could have considered Jeremy Sowers because he was the one that kind of led that first wave of this era of Vanderbilt baseball. You could have considered other guys like, and I was thinking about this earlier, but Dominic De La Osa was part of that first elite team that they had. Mike Minor, of course, was kind of part of that bridge to what they were. Sonny Gray. There were so many good players. J.J. Bladé. There were so many good players you could have picked. I picked Carson Fulmer because Carson Fulmer was the ace of the national championship team. Carson Fulmer the year before when they didn't get out of the Super Regionals and they had the best team in college baseball. Carson Fulmer got hurt before game one and could not pitch in game one that they lost and ended up losing that Super Regional. Fulmer was that dude in 2014. He was the ace. He was the ace again in 2015. And so while there are so many guys I could have picked, I went with Carson Fulmer, and that one was tough. And I'll say this about Carson Fulmer, and I'm surprised he's never really made it either. Back to the whole point about Pedro Alvarez, I'm surprised that Carson Fulmer hasn't made it because I figured if Fulmer wasn't going to be an elite starter in the major leagues, he was going to be an elite closer. And he's never really become that. But again, this isn't about what they did after they left Vanderbilt. This is what they did at Vanderbilt. Rocker, Price, Swanson, Alvarez, Fulmer. Those are my top five. 615-737-1025 is our phone number if you want to get in. Titans minicamp is right around the corner. Coming up next, we will take a look at what is really important because we're going to have all the breakdowns tomorrow and Wednesday, and we'll have what Mike Vrabel has to say on Thursday, and we got a big week of Titans minicamp. There are a couple of things that are really important. I mean, I think really, really important as far as Titans minicamp is concerned. We'll get to that coming up next. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025. Tomorrow is a Dinger Tuesday, speaking of baseball. The FanDuel Sportsbook app, my official sportsbook app, is offering you the special on Dinger Tuesday. That's right. Check out FanDuel's new promo live every Tuesday. $5 Dinger Tuesdays. Place a $25 wager on any player to hit a home run on a Tuesday and get $5 bonus and site credit for every home run hit in the game. Max of $25. They've got a lot of guys hitting the ball out of the park right now ever since the new rules to pitchers have come into play. Tatis Jr.'s lighting it up. Guerrero Jr.'s lighting it up. Acuna Jr.'s lighting it up. I picked Acuna last time. Not going to go with him. I'll go with Tatis for Dinger Tuesday. But again, it can be anybody you pick, and if they hit a dinger, you get that bonus. There's a reason FanDuel is America's number one sports book. The app is simple to use. They've got great odds on all different betting markets, unique fun bet types like same-game parlays, always-on promotions that let you get more action out of every game day. And when you win, FanDuel will pay you your winnings in as little as 24 hours. Just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app and sign up with my promo code JGM to get in on all the action. That's FanDuel Sportsbook promo code JGM. Must be 21 and older and present in Tennessee. First online real money wager only for risk-free bet. Refund and bonus issued as non-withdrawable site credit that expires in 7 days. Max bonus $25 per game. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call Tennessee Redline. 1-800-889-9789. It's NASCAR weekend in Nashville. Be sure to get your tickets for Saturday and Sunday as tickets are going fast. Kids 12 and under get in free Friday and Saturday, plus experience the post-race fireworks Friday night. RV camping for NASCAR weekend is still available. For more info, visit NashvilleSuperSpeedway.com. I am a much bigger NASCAR fan after they banned the Confederate flags. So go to NASCAR, and if you got the Confederate flags, why? And, you know, but either way, don't bring them because they're not allowed.
There you go.
So I will take that. By the way, I meant to do this earlier and I forgot, and I apologize for this. But it's time to give away those Jimmy Buffett tickets. Be caller 5 right now, 615-737-1025, and you will win a pair of tickets to see Jimmy Buffett and the Coral Reefer Band at Ascend Amphitheater on Tuesday, July 6th. Good luck to you. 615-737-1025 is the phone number for that. My apologies for not giving away those earlier. Okay, Titans minicamp is the mandatory one. It starts tomorrow. So we will have a live reaction. We'll be out at 615 day at Ford Ice Center in Bellevue. But we will have full reaction from the players and Vrabel after practice tomorrow. They have three practices scheduled, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, for the mandatory minicamp. Now, I believe, and I could be wrong, Thursday is like the day that they show up to practice and then the coach comes out and goes, oh no, guys, we're going to play softball instead and have a good time and get ready for the season. And maybe because there's less practices or something, they're not going to do that. I don't know. I just saw Vrabel's press conferences at 11 o'clock. His press conference the other days are at like 4 o'clock. So Vrabel's press conferences at 11 o'clock tells me that there's probably not a lot of activity going on. So there's really 2 days. And we'll have TD and we'll have Joe Rexroad tell us what goes down and we'll have all those guys that are out there break it down for us.
We appreciate them.
But I really beg the question, what matters at Titans mandatory minicamp? So I'm going to ask you what you think matters, because I think what you think matters and what the fans are going to wonder about mandatory minicamp is not exactly what I think actually matters, but what do you think matters at mandatory minicamp?
I need to see that defense. I need to see them work against these really good wide receivers. I need to see a defensive line that looks like one cohesive unit. I would like to see Bud Dupree out there looking healthy, looking confident, looking strong. That's what I'm looking for, is just defense, both on the line and the backfield. That's what I need to see.
See, and I think that's what a lot of people would say, something like that, or I need to see if the offensive line is going to... You're not going to find out any of that. There's no way to tell if the defense is going to be in the
No.
I have no idea if this defense is going to rush the passer, because they're not going to rush the passer in this. It's going to be a non-contact camp. No pads. There's not going to be any hitting. There's not going to be any thumping. There's not going to be any legit 11-on-11 football. So really, all you have to take away are three really important things. One, who's there? Because the bigger question is, who's not there?
Mm-hmm.
This is the mandatory minicamp. So if somebody is not there, there's a reason. So Derrick Henry has been in Dallas doing all these Instagram workouts. He better be there tomorrow, because if he's not there tomorrow, it's a big story.
He'll think he won't be there tomorrow.
He'll be there tomorrow.
Yeah.
But that's a big story. So who's there, who's not there? That's the first thing. The second thing, I think, and again, this is where it's going to be tough for us, because we'll be on the air when they hit the field, so we won't be able to see this. And there are restrictions on what the media is allowed to report. So you're going to have to read between the lines. We can't ask TD who's starting at right tackle. He can't give us that answer. You're not allowed to report that. But when every single person who covers the Titans comes out of this mandatory minicamp and says, I think Dylan Raidens is going to play a lot early, that'll tell you your answer. So that's the second thing. Who's the right tackle? Is it Kendall Lamb? Is it Ty Sambrylo? Is it Dylan Raidens? There are three legitimate options as to who could be starting at right tackle for the Titans. That is something that you can actually tell.
Mm-hmm.
Because they'll run out there with the first unit whenever they're out there on the field. Now, Vrabel may screw with the media and put Sambrylo out there when deep down inside he knows it's going to be Kendall Lamb. But again, all we can figure is whatever he shows us. So that's a big question. Who is going to be starting at right tackle? The other thing, and this is the thing that I think is the most important, and that is, which rookie is rolling with the big boys? I don't think we're going to see Caleb Farley on the field, just like I don't think we're going to see Bud Dupree on the field. So forget about those guys. And we know that if Dupree's healthy, he starts. And if Farley is healthy, he starts.
But do we know that?
Farley?
Yeah.
You took an injured guy in the first round, and if he's healthy, he's not going to play?
I'm just saying. I think Bud Dupree, you can guarantee if he's healthy that he starts.
So, like, I think you have this kind of, like, feeling that Christian Fulton might not stink because you are an LSU fan.
No, that's not it.
But I think, like, everybody else here is more worried that there's a pretty good likelihood that Fulton's going to stink. I mean, if we're told that Caleb Farley's the number one corner in the draft on a team that has no corners, and they draft him, and then he gets out there and he doesn't play, that's a humongous story. Like, if Farley is 100% and they get out to play this season and they put Breon Borders on the field over him, that's a story.
Yeah.
So Farley's not going to be out there for minicamp, but Farley's going to start if he's healthy. Dupree's going to start if he's healthy. Dupree might start if he's not healthy, just because they have nobody else and they have so much invested in him. But again, what other rookies are out there with the good players? If you see Monty Rice out there with the good players, that's a sign. That tells you something early. When I went to training camp last year, there were two players I saw with the starting units that I were like, whoa. One was Chris Jackson, the 7th round rookie corner out of Marshall. And he was like the last player taken, and they had three picks in the seventh round. And they took Cole McDonald, the quarterback out of Hawaii, who absolutely sucked. And they took him, and then they took Chris Jackson. So when I was out of training camp practice last year, and I saw the starting unit, and I saw Chris Jackson out there with Adoree Jackson and Malcolm Butler, and I'm like, who is that? I'm like, oh, that's a sign. Then Adoree Jackson gets hurt, and Chris Jackson, week one against the Denver Broncos, is starting at corner. Now, the other one was DeAndre Walker, who was technically a second-round player, was drafted in 19, but got hurt, didn't play. And he was originally starting at outside pass rusher. So it was like Harold Landry on one side, and it was DeAndre Walker on the other side. And I thought, you know, I remember DeAndre Walker made some plays at Georgia, and I think that I, you know, maybe they thought that he was a good player. He was injured last year, so put him out there, outside pass rusher. Hell, he can't be worse than the other guys. And then they cut him like a week later. So I don't know why he was rolling with the starters and then got cut a week later, but that's what happened. So it's not necessarily a full tell, but it usually gives you an idea of who they think can play and who they think can't. And Tajay Sharpe was an example of this as a rookie, a fourth-round pick out of UMass, and immediately, first rookie minicamp, Sharpe's running with the ones. It was like, yeah, he's actually going to play. And so that's, I think, kind of something that you look for at minicamp. That Bill Belichick said today, it's not an evaluation camp. Bull crap. You don't have
enough
time.
Exactly what it is.
You just don't have enough time anymore. You're not given all the offseason practices. You're not given all the training camp practices. There's not two-a-days with pads anymore. It just doesn't exist. So everything has to be an evaluation because you get these guys on the field so little. So it's not a tell if Raiden's is starting at right tackle, but I think it's a big step in the right direction if he's starting at right tackle. I also think where Dylan Raiden's plays is on the line will clear up a lot of this confusion when he was drafted of all these guys saying, oh, he could be a guard, or hey, he could even be a center, or some people saying he's actually a left tackle. So to me, that's what you can take away from mandatory minicamp. The other stuff about like who's in shape, you can't take. Who's in shape today is not going to matter come July 27th. If you were to be really in shape today, like you ran a marathon today, and then you sat on your couch and you ate donuts and you showed back up on July 27th, you wouldn't be in shape. So that doesn't really matter. Who is making plays? That doesn't really matter. Ryan Tannehill should complete almost every pass because there's no pressure, so he can stand there and hold the ball for as long as he wants. Now, who do they put in the slot? Josh Reynolds, Dez Fitzpatrick. That is worth looking at. Because if they got Dez Fitzpatrick ahead of Josh Reynolds, that's a story. If they have Dez Fitzpatrick ahead of Cam Batson, that's a story. But to me, if you're a member of the media, you're attending these practices, if you're reporting on it, and there are certain things you're not allowed to report. But I would just say those are the things I'm looking for at the rookie minicamp is kind of where is everybody, or rookie minicamp, the mandatory minicamp, where is everybody on the depth chart? One big tell, who's the third pass rusher on this team? You'll see because Bud Dupree won't be out there. Who's the starting nickel on this team? You'll see. Is it Elijah Molden? Is it Christian Fulton? Because I think there's a theory that, hey, Fulton can play outside, but Fulton's better inside. Well, if they're expecting Caleb Farley to be healthy, they'll put Chris Jackson outside. They'll move Fulton inside. If they don't expect Farley healthy, or they think Fulton's an outside guy, or they think Fulton's not very good, they'll move Fulton outside, and you'll see Elijah Molden in the slot. So those are just the things that I think I would take notice of if I were going to be out there, if the minicamp wasn't going on right before our show starts. Those are the things I think I'd be looking for. Caroline's is coming up next. 615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. By the way, tomorrow we will be live at the Ford Ice Center in Bellevue. It is 615 day. We'll be celebrating the city of Nashville with our friends at the Nashville Predators. So we'll be there all day. Presented by Social Furniture to benefit the Boys and Girls Clubs of Middle Tennessee. It'll be a 12-hour window, 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., and we'll be broadcasting live from the Ford Ice Center Bellevue. Fans will have multiple opportunities to take the ice during donation-based public skate sessions. Draft Picks Restaurant and Bar will be open all day from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., and they'll have a lot of stuff going on in the parking lot. food and beverage options, entertainment options, face painting, and more. The National Predators Foundation, empowered by Smile Direct Club, is running a silent auction, which will be live until 6:15 tomorrow. Text PREDS to 76278 to bid on exciting sports merchandise and signed Predators apparel, and 100% of those proceeds will go directly to charity. For more details, visit thegamenational.com/615. We will see you there tomorrow. Stillman and Company, we're delivered by TriStar Moving. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game. They always say the game is never over until... I'm just going to say the big lady because I don't want anybody to get mad. But they always say...
It ain't over till it's over.
It ain't over till it's over.
That's probably a safer way to say it.
That is certainly a safer way to say it. And it is never over until that thing happens. And in the case of Caroline's last week, it was not over until yesterday, in which the New York Islanders and Barry Trotz, who may be the best coach in the NHL, the New York Islanders and the Barry Trotz won over Tampa freaking Bay by a final score of 2-1.
And you were so confident about that one.
I was confident about that one. I mean, David Poile was confident about that one when he fired Barry Trotz, too. Oh, too soon? Sorry.
Ooh, ouch, ouch, ouch.
And so, Caroline, neither of us was over 500 for this week.
Not a great weekend for us.
10-12. I was 10-8 going into Friday. I got everything wrong. 10-12. Caroline Fenton, 10-11-1. So Caroline wins the week.
So I also told you that it was – so last week I picked the underdog in the UFC fight to win just because it was a way better value, and Jared thought that I was playing some sort of
– I did.
– mind-tricking game, and I really genuinely was not because the underdog, in fact, did not win.
Yeah, I thought you were cheating the system.
I wasn't.
I think you were trying to
– I am a woman of the people.
So Caroline Fenton is 1-0 in the four-week challenge. We start week two – and it's Caroline's.
Get in on the action. Put the money on the mahogany. What's on tap on the sports books? It's time to break it all down with Caroline's. Here on Stillman and Company.
On ESPN.
102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
Lead us up.
So I'm feeling bold today. So every single one of my picks is against the spread. We don't do money lines on Mondays. Vegas, Montreal.
You making like a new rule around here?
No, it was just for today.
Oh, okay.
It sounded nice in my head. This week, we don't do money lines on Mondays. I might feel differently next week. Vegas and Montreal, I'm going to take Vegas -1.5 for +105. This is their first meeting in over a year and a half. Thank you to COVID. There is so much unknown about this series since they have not played since January of 2020. So I'm just going to go with Vegas because they're the more reliable team. I thought the Avs would win the cup and Vegas beat them. So there you go on that. Carey Price has a 9.35 save percentage. Marc-Andre Fleury has a 9.23. You're looking at, you know, pretty much neck and neck for these goaltenders.
Old goalies who used to be great who are playing well right now.
Say that again?
Old goalies who used to be great who are playing well right now.
Yes, exactly.
I'm going to take Montreal +1.5. The reason I'm going to go with Montreal +1.5 is I think that Colorado series took a lot out of Vegas. I think Vegas will win this series, but I think Montreal will get game one. Plus, I'm getting 1.5, so give it to me, or a 1.5, I should say. So give it to me, +1.5. Give me the Canadiens, who, by the way, I have bet on like 4 times in the playoffs, and they've worked for me, so I can't get off the train now.
That stops today. Jazz Clippers, give me playoff Kawhi. Clippers -5.5. -110. So Donovan Mitchell had an ankle thing that left him out of 16 games in the regular season. That was really the only injury hiccup the Jazz had all year. He rolled his ankle in game 3. He did not play a complete fourth quarter. So I think Donovan Mitchell will play tonight, but I think that might set him back a little bit. Jazz connected for 43% of their three-pointers in game 3, and LA still smoked them 132-106. Clippers outshot and out-rebounded Utah in game 3. Utah has 48 assists and 34 turnovers, while LA has 62 assists to 28 turnovers. LA has just been looking like the better team. They took game 3. I feel good about them in game 4.
Give me the Jazz. I don't know why. Give me the Jazz.
Okay.
I think Paul George will be up to his normal tricks of not doing playoff anything in the playoffs. Yeah. So I'll take the Jazz +5.5. What's next?
Giants, Diamondbacks, give me the Giants -1.5 +105. Arizona is just absolutely horrendous. They have lost 19 straight road games, 9-27 on the road this year. Arizona has Matt Peacock out on the mound. He's a rookie. It's his 6th start of the season. He's got a 5.24 ERA. In his last start, he threw a fastball for 85% of his pitches. So I think with this incredible Giants offense, you can kind of see them take advantage of that a little bit. San Francisco has Alex Wood on the mound, 3.79 ERA. He's allowing opponents just a 1.98 batting average. At home, the Diamondbacks offense has the fourth worst batting average and second worst on base percentage in the past week.
Yeah, I'll go with the Giants on the money line because they're terrible. The Diamondbacks are terrible.
Diamondbacks just aren't great.
Diamondbacks are awful. I'm going to stay with baseball. I was really tempted to bet on Philadelphia again. I'm going to stay with baseball, though. I look at tonight's games, and I see Phillies-Dodgers, and I am going to take the Dodgers on the money line. The Phillies traveling all the way out west. Tony Gonsolin, though, has not been great. 5-4-0, though he does not have a decision so far. He's only worked an inning and a half this season, or an inning and two-thirds. Sam Howard, top prospect for Phillies will go today, but he's 0-1 with a 4-6-1. Phillies are, playing okay. I'm going to go with the Dodgers, though, to get it done today on the money line.
Give me the Phillies on the money line because I want to be different.
I thought you weren't allowed to do money line.
Well, you did, so I will, too.
Oh, okay. Change the rules as we go.
My picks, we don't do money lines on Mondays.
Okay, even though I took the Giants on the money line, just because, like, what's the difference between 1.5 and the money line? So I took the money line anyways. I guess a little bit of money. That's going to do it for us. We are out of here. Preds Insiders. That's coming up next. See you tomorrow from Ford Eye Center in Bellevue for 615 Day. Stillman and Company, we're back tomorrow, too.